Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Second half kickoff on a Tuesday morning, the first Tuesday of June. Braves tonight taking on the Pirates at 7:05 up in Pittsburgh. Time to bring in our man Chip Towers from the AJC's DogNation.com. Hey, Chip. How are
you? Fellas.
You doing all right?
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Great. Great. Great to hear that. You spent a lot of time out at Foley Field this weekend, didn't you?
I did, yeah. That was been a while since I've spent three straight days the way we covered Georgia this year. A lot of times we'd come for the last one or come for the first one, and depending on what the series was and who was pitching and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, good to sit there for all, what was it, four? And a little bit of those others. And, very disappointing. I mean, I'm certainly not as disappointed as those young men and that coach is, but it was disappointing. And you hear all those people, like, oh my God, we're never going to make it, but I did listen to you and Jeff, all year long. So I feel like I followed the program, just about as close as you could. And I like that team, and baseball is a crazy sport, and you just don't always win them, and the other guy's trying to win too. And my goodness, I mean, Florida State was just about as buzzsaw of a team as I've seen in a while. I'm not sure anybody on the other side of them was going to win this weekend. Maybe not. I mean, maybe Georgia could have done one or two things different, but I certainly understood it and still think it's a great year. And Scott Strickland and that program are got a carrot dangling in front of them now. They've come real close a couple of times, and they definitely have. Nobody's more motivated to get over that hump than that group is, I'm sure.
It's funny too, because I'll tell you this: the Florida State fan base, and they're certainly very exuberant right now, very excited, but they have gone, Mike Martin, this is his last year. He's been the coach 40 seasons. They've been to a regional every year, 16 College World Series, but they've never won it. And their fans just they kill them for that. I mean, it's just weird how the baseball postseason is just, I think it's the trickiest of any sport, the team sports, just because of, and I think Braves fans, most of us are Braves fans, know how that is from the run that they had, and that they only won the World Series one time. It's just it's bizarre. It really is. And
there's always the argument about the regional, who got who and what regional and all that. I don't profess to be a college baseball expert, but as soon as I saw Florida State in there, I mean, everybody knows the history of Florida State baseball, and I was like, so immediately it's like you check it. Well, they didn't win many games this year, and all that. But I didn't even realize until Florida State was coming there that Mike Martin was stepping down. I thought, golly, that's not good either. So I don't know if they were just motivated to, send out the Gipper, win one for the Gipper or win one for the Skipper, whatever you want to say. But
the Skipper.
But those bats, I mean, that's and I was also, I don't know if you noticed this, David, just looking at their lineup, from Salvatore all the way down to Becker, those guys were built a certain way too. I mean, Georgia's got some size on their team, but not that much size. I mean, every one of those guys looked like a triple-A prospect to me. Just tough luck. Just really tough luck, and I don't think there's any question now, with the 2 years with a national seed and hosting, that there's a pretty good foundation. I didn't check the draft yesterday. I don't know if you guys did, but you know, it seems like a really good core will be returning from that team, and I have no clue about recruiting, but, you know, it would appear the way things have been set up with, you know, and who's, you know, definitely returning and then who might return, that it should be pretty good again next year. What's your thought,
yeah,
on that, David?
We broke it down a little bit. So Shunk went in the second round last night, so he'll be moving on as expected. I would think Tony Losi will be gone from next. Will be gone, and then maybe the only other one that I think might be gone that's a junior position player is Tucker Maxwell. But I don't know. I mean, he might come back. He's an older junior though. He was actually draft eligible last year. But yeah, as far as the you know, there's a bunch of juniors though on this roster, and there's several pitchers that before the season started, you thought, okay, he'll be back for a senior year, but they had such good years this year that you don't know. And I, you know, that performance that Tim Elliott had on Sunday was epic, and he's had such a great year. He's a guy that I would have, before the season started, thought, well, he'll be back for a senior year, and now I'm not so sure. Lefty Justin Glover is another one who's had a really, really good year, and he might be a guy that ends up leaving. But they're still going to have a good core for next year because they're going to have Hancock and Wilcox anchoring the rotation. And, you know, not having Will Proctor all year and losing C.J. Smith for the last third of the season, you know, you'll have those guys back. Tucker Bradley, who's one of Georgia's starting outfielders, missed basically the entire season. He got hurt the first weekend. They'll get him back. Great news last night, Cam Shepard announced that he's coming back for his senior year. So, yeah, there will be a good core of players coming back next year that will certainly help. So, I don't – you know, it's hard for me to predict where the Dogs are going to be in the preseason rankings, but I would assume, you know, 10 to 15, something like that. So, the expectations, again, will be there for the Dogs to have another good year next year. But, of course, we know you could be – it's like recruiting. You could be ranked 15th in the country and – 6th or 7th in the SEC, so it's still brutally, brutally tough. But that's just my opinion.
Tim Elliott's definitely a wild card in there, you know. And I think you could. It was interesting during the regional. Like, so when Losi's on the mound, you know, on Friday, I counted there were 12 scouts behind the backstop. You know, every pitch Losi had, you know, they got their gun on it. The poor Mercer guy, they all sat down when the Mercer guy got up the next inning. You know, so I see that in Georgia's first game, so I'm monitoring that all weekend. And there wasn't 12 scouts out there for Tim Elliott, but they had their guns on him for sure. They were looking at him.
I noticed as the year went on, because Tim did such a great job in the midweek starts. I noticed as the year went on that he was getting more and more attention. Sean Kenny, Georgia's pitching coach, has done just a tremendous job. By the way, Zach Kristofak is another guy, is a junior that, you know, we'll probably see his name called maybe tomorrow, but I know his size is one of the things that, you know, everybody talks about. So his situation will, you know, I guess Logan and I were talking about this earlier too. Unless these guys get like life changing money, you know, it still feels like you're better off to come back and get your degree, and you can still be drafted after your senior year. It's not like you can't, but I would think that'll be the decider for a lot of these guys. But you know, there's the chance for. I think George is going to be really good pitching and defense again next year. One guy that's very interesting is Riley King, who kind of came out of nowhere this year and had a terrific year. He's a redshirt sophomore, so he's draft eligible.
So, oh, goodness. Yeah. I didn't think about him. Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see. We'll see. We've got the draft going on today and finishing up tomorrow. But I know George will be sweating it a little bit.
One thing I think that has changed a little bit, and you might have a better idea of this than me, Dave, it seems to me that more players, more prospects are choosing to stay in college.
Yeah.
And certainly, I think that's certainly the case coming out of high school, because, my gosh, I mean, not only do you get an education, and at Georgia, you know, that education is worth a lot of money nowadays. But, you know, you're not riding around, you know, the Southeast on a bus, you know, and I mean, just the life is a lot better. I mean, the life of Plus, the competition in the SEC, to me, it's at least double-A ball. That SEC tournament, I was pretty amazed at pitcher after pitcher. It seemed like Georgia just kept running up against some other major league prospect on the other side. I just think the quality of the ball, plus the lifestyle, plus the education, makes it a pretty worthy. And you're doing that, the first 3 years in your career, and then by the time you would be going into your senior year, you've got 3 years of ball under your belt, and you're not you shouldn't be starting. Your path to the major league, it seems like they're getting to major league ball quicker after that. Like a guy like Shunk, I wouldn't expect him to toil in the minor leagues for many years. That guy's pretty big ball ready.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Basically the scouting report on him is he's being drafted as a position player, not as a pitcher. But he had four career homers and then he hit 15 this year. If he hits for power, he's going to move up the he's going to move up the ladder really fast. And if that's a scouting report on me, and I get drafted by the Colorado Rockies, I like that because that's the team you want to get drafted by if it's all about hitting the baseball. But Jeff and I talk about this a lot because you were talking about the what you would compare college baseball. Like in the SEC, in like the Clemsons and the Techs, the teams that we play on a regular basis, 15 or 20 years ago, there might have been two or three guys on the staff that would throw 90 miles an hour or more than that. And now it's like there's two or three guys on the staff that don't throw 90 miles an hour. It's like everybody's throwing. You talk about like this year, Georgia could roll a Losey, a Hancock, and a Wilcox out there on a weekend. And you're talking about three right-handers that can, that can throw, 93 to 96, can top out at 97 with a ton of run. That's just – you just didn't see that 15 or 20 years ago. And it you're right. In the SEC, the ACC, the Pac-12, the Big 12, you can recruit players to come play for you for two or three years and say, you're not going to be any worse off playing college baseball than you would be if you're a first round pick and you're getting several million dollars. That's one thing, but these guys want to go to college and get their degree and live that lifestyle because. Yeah, when people say, well, you can always go back and get your degree, that's true, you can, but you don't. But when you go back and get your degree, you don't live the college lifestyle. And that's always a, kind of a thing that you want to point out to people, too. And I think it's terrific. And we'll see how it goes here with this draft. But, to get back to what we're originally talking about, Georgia should be set up next year to potentially have another good run. So I know it was disappointing this weekend and didn't see it coming. I'll even say that, although if the three seed in the regional is a mid-major instead of Florida State, maybe it's a little bit different, And in this case, you had FAU as the two and Florida State as the three. Well, there was obviously a difference in those schools. But still, the baseball postseason is funky. And unfortunately, it bit Georgia. But all that being said, we'll see what goes on with the draft here for the next couple of days.
Chip, I do want to ask you a couple questions about the new alcohol rules. But before I get there, I do want to point out an article you wrote over the weekend. Very interesting. Warren Morris passed away back in April, longtime Georgia trainer. And that kind of sparked you to writing about current director of sports medicine, Ron Corson. Especially after a couple pretty high-profile, very scary instances in Athens where he played a big part in essentially saving some players' lives here. What do Georgia fans not know about Ron Corson? A lot of them know the name, but don't know much about him himself. What would they be interested in finding out?
Well, that's the amazing thing about Ron. I think most people, his reputation kind of precedes him. And that is the death of Warren Morris. I knew Warren Morris quite well, as Dave probably did, too. I go back far enough for that, and yeah. He retired in the
90s. I didn't know him. I knew him, but I didn't know him.
Well, what I loved about Warren was that was in the days where information wasn't as hard to come by, right? So we used to get the we called it the Warren Report, you know. And so, you know, at the end of practice, I mean, you'd go over there and talk to, you know, Coach Dooley or Ray Goff, and then you'd go get the Warren Report. You know, hey, I noticed so and so wasn't out there. I mean, you know, a lot of times the coach wouldn't even know what the injury situation was. Or ask Warren, you know, and so you ask him, and Warren would give you the breakdown. So got to know Warren pretty good, and of course. Practices were also open back in those days, so you're standing on the sidelines. A lot of times, the trainer's standing over there, so you stand over there and talk to him. I mean, he was just one of those super nice, intelligent men. And so Ron Corson succeeded him, and it was one of those things. It was a little bit controversial at the time, not really, but I mean, he came in and supplanted. Morris is the football guy, and Morris went over and finished his last couple of years doing kind of all sports, and Ron came in there, and he, you know, he had a reputation even then. He came to Georgia from Alabama, but he was a Samford guy maybe from an educational standpoint, and went with Tennessee, Chattanooga, or something like that before there. Anyway, Ron Corson nowadays is first off, he has, you know, a degree or one of those acronym certificates and everything there possibly could be in you know, medical science, and just really, really knows what he's doing. And if you've never had a chance to do it, try to do it. He gives tours, you know, certainly to recruits of Georgia's training area, but there are machines in there that, you know, I mean, it's just amazing what he has, you know, accrued for Georgia in their training area. But in the particular case of these two things, so you had Elijah Godwin take a javelin to the back that just narrowly misses his heart and embeds 5 inches in him. And then you had the situation with Juan Mathis diagnosed with a cyst on his brain. And Ron Corson was the trainer who happened to see Juan Mathis. And, you know, I mean, how many times do you hear about people saying, well, you know, you probably just got a little sinus. Here's some Allegra, you know, and here's a few Advil, and come back and see me after I go on this cruise for a week. But instead, he didn't like what he saw up there. He ordered up an MRI. The MRI reveals a cyst that was growing in the sinus cavity on his brain. And, you know, the kid has immediately has surgery, and you know, the bad things are avoided. And same thing with the guy with the javelin. I mean, I thought it was incredible that they had the wherewithal to, you know, not pull the javelin out that stuck in him, but cut it off and leave the piece in there. Now, that may just be, you know, training 101, but I just thought it was incredible. If they don't leave that embedded, you know, he might have bled out right there on, you know, Speck Towns track. So I just thought it was a good occasion to kind of draw attention to the professionals that Georgia has around their program that you don't hear about all that much. They're kind of in the background. But, you know, Ron Corson, I tell you, in recruiting, there's a few players that he's tipped the scales, you know, football-wise. You know what? I could go to Alabama or I could go to Florida, but they got Ron Corson over there in Georgia, and he's going to take care of my son.
I was going to ask you that.
That's a great point. It's a great point.
Okay, so moving on real quick. As far as the alcohol is concerned, you were talking with Brandon Nation on Dog Nation Daily last night. You made a couple of interesting points. You said a lot of the big-time donors that you have spoken to seem to not have much interest in the current structure that was recently, you know, unveiled by the UGA Athletic Association as to how they can drink. And to the point where you even went as far as saying this kind of could be looked at as negative PR for Georgia right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's negative PR. You know, I don't want to beat up Georgia on this or anything. I just, you know, there are ideas and there's, you know, reactions to them. And generally, the general reaction that, now look, I don't get to poll. There's 1,054 McGill Society members, and the threshold is higher. Now, I don't know how many of those qualify for a $100,000 donor, but I just think there's a little bit of hypocrisy involved in that. You know, look,
you know, this is just toeing the line, and you're just getting closer and closer to blurring the line. I think this fall you're going to see a number of programs go ahead and provide a few, I wouldn't say a bunch of them, alcohol for the general fan base. And I think that's who deserves it more than necessarily people who give $100,000 or more. You know, most of them, you know, get all the alcohol they want anyway. I mean, you know, you're not supposed to drink on the club area, but certainly in the Sky Suites, those are privately leased, and you know, I've seen them, you know, help people off the elevator coming down from those things during the game. You know, they've been lighting it up there for a while, and then of course you got the East End Lounge down there on the bottom level that started last year. They have a place that they can go back there and drink during the games anyway. So then you got this thing right here on the middle. It's got room for 400 people. And, you know, a lot of those people that have given $100,000 or more over the years, they're just, the ones I talk to anyway, they're not interested in it. And then there's a couple of McGill people that I talk to that haven't given that much that feel a little bit left out. So, I don't know how much at the end of the day this will go away. We'll be talking about football and who's going to start at right guard pretty soon enough. But right now, you know, it's just it doesn't seem like the positive that they wanted to roll out there. That, hey, there's going to be a little bit of a beer garden down there on the 200 level this fall. I don't know. Maybe it'll be a big hit. More and more will want to do it. But I think it's just a matter of time before, you know, they're going to have taps up there at the concession stands and probably shut them down at halftime. But, you know, I think those people who are in the 300 level and on the 100 level deserve to buy beer at the stadium if they want to as well.
Well, it's something that is, well, it's, I guess, just much more common than it was. And I guess it's now like, because I keep talking about this, it's like if the SEC is the federal government, they've just decided to let the states, you know, have their say in it. States' rights things now, with all the schools can now kind of decide how they want to do it and how they want to handle it. But I still feel like there's just going to be some that are going to be slower to the to actually taking action, just because it's potentially not needed as much as some of the other schools, if that's how they, you know, if that's how they feel about it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that was Georgia's draft. I mean, I think they knew what the vote was going to turn out like, in Birmingham. Destin, they usually have some idea of what's going to be voted on. And I think Georgia, this was just Georgia's reaction to it. Hey, let's meet in the middle. And literally on the 200 concourse is in the middle. $100,000 is probably in the motor, the middle of their donorship. You know, they have, learned at the board meeting that maybe there's 11 Silver Circle members, you know, or something like that. Those people have given more than $1 million. It's amazing, you know, the people that have done that, you know, with regular giving over a long period of time in most cases. But anyway, you're trying to do whatever you can for that subset of people. So I get that. But I do think it's just a matter of time before everybody else will be able to do it, and I don't look at that as the scourge of college football. I mean, they're just trying to keep people coming to the stadium, and as we all know, you know, everybody's drinking anyway, whether it's before the game or after, and actually a lot of people leave a little early so they can get back to the tailgate when they know that victory's in hand, so maybe they'll hang out a little bit longer. We'll see.
The irony of the, what did you call the 11 people that have
Silver
given?
Silver Circle.
Yeah, the irony is probably several of those are beer and alcohol distributors anyway. The other interesting thing about all this talk is that that's who Georgia's, you know, biggest donors are too, so...
Exactly.
Yeah. So we'll see. What were you about to say, Logan?
I just want to ask you, Chip, before we let you go, a couple of tweets over the weekend from position coaches. They've all had their sort of backyard barbecues. All the players are on campus getting ready for summer. What happens football-wise between now and the start of fall camp, which is usually the first week in August? What are they allowed to do? Just kind of outline for people what happens in terms of practice and workouts and everything.
Well, probably this week they'll actually start getting out on the field and working out a pretty good bit. Now the it's different. There's a NCAA rule that was approved a couple of years ago that you can actually have 8 hours, I think it is, with your position coach. And I can't remember if that's each week or if that's a whole summer or whatever. But largely it is a strength and condition based and then player organized session. And the bottom line is they'll pretty much practice and work out 5 days a week from now until, you know, preseason camp starts the 1st of August. So the 7-on-7 is a really big deal now in the summer, and that's organized by the quarterbacks. You know, Jake Fromm will be in charge of putting in, making sure that guys show up and all that kind of stuff, because it's basically a volunteer program. But everybody comes, you know, it's if you're not there as a quote-unquote volunteer, you're not going to be considered for very, very much heading into the fall. That's just the way it is now. Nobody's holding a gun to anybody's head, but it's just competitive, and you know everybody else is doing that, and that's what Georgia's going to do. But the main guy they're having to answer to right now is Scott Sinclair, and this will be a shocking couple of weeks for those freshmen who just arrived. We get sore a little bit when we go for our walks and runs and maybe do a set of 20-pound curls. These guys, they'll be feeling a different level of hurt for the next few weeks.
No doubt. Hey, Chip, great stuff as always. Thank you very much, and we'll catch you again next week.
See you then.
All right, Chip Towers from the AJC's Dog Nation Daily, dognation.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.